Making your way in the world today takes everything you've got. Taking a break from all your worries sure would help a lot. Wouldn't you like to get away? Sometimes you wanna go where everybody knows your name, and they're always glad you came. You wanna be where you can see our troubles are all the same. You wanna be where everybody knows your name.
Hello everyone, this is the latest episode of New Kids on the Rock, where we pair New Island residents with longtime Islanders to find out what it means to call the island home. And I am Adam Day.
And I'm Tara Morgan. Thanks, Adam. So today we're here with two folks that I've met fairly recently, with Keith Pryor and Bill Tantau. Can you guys introduce yourselves? Just say your name, how long you've been on the island, and a little bit about yourselves.
Okay, my name is Keith Pryor. That's spelled with an I, not with a Y. There's a distinction. It's mostly political. I'm kind of an old newbie on the island. I've been coming here since 1948 in the summers. My mom grew up on the island starting in 1918 in Burton. And I moved here permanently in December of 2017. But I've got family on the island, some legacy issues. One of my uncles was Beale of Beale Greenhouses. Mm. I've got two cousins that still live in the island. But I spent every summer here from 48 to 63, and then sporadically in between then and...
Very fun.
Very nice. And Bill, how about yourself?
What's your story?
Well, I was born at a very early age. You can cut that out.
Thanks.
Been here not quite 2 years, because we have an older daughter who lives here and a grandson, our only grandchild. So it was a natural transformation for us. We were at a point where we had to do something. We were living on a ranch property in Northern California, and it was a lot of boots on the ground, and I'm not getting any younger, and you know the syndrome. Anyway, so this is an excellent opportunity to continue a rural life, which is pretty much my life story. I was born in San Francisco, and we moved to Cupertino during the Second World War to a prune and apricot operation. So my formative years were ranch life, tractors, horses, cows, pigeons, chickens.
Wow.
And tortillas, and you know, it's been in.
And you're here with your wife, Sally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, it was a natural transition for us to pick another rural location, and this fills the...
Where did you move from when you moved here in 2017?
Portland, Oregon.
Oh.
I've been migrating north. Can I say global warming?
Right. Because you have some California connections, yeah?
I was born in California.
What part of California?
Hollywood.
Hollywood, California. Who is it?
Haven't heard of it.
Who's actually born in Hollywood, California?
Yeah, well, at the time that I was born, it was the largest maternity hospital in the L.A. County area.
Wow, cool.
So my brother and my sister and I were all born there.
Wow.
But my mom ended up there after going to UCLA for a couple of years and then met my dad. They got married and started having kids. That was that. So she quit coming back to Vashon until I was almost 5 years old.
And then she started bringing all the kids and everybody back up
to visit. She would up here, and sometimes we would cheat. We would leave before school was out, and we would come back up here, spend 2.5 at least, sometimes 3 months. One year, I think we spent more like 4.5 months. So you could say that I've got my genes planted here, if you will.
And the earliest person was here as of 1918.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's when my mom was born. And my grandfather had built a house in Burton right across from Camp Burton.
Mm-hmm.
The house doesn't still stand. It fell into the bay in 1936, according to the Vashon News Record.
Mm-hmm.
And he rebuilt it in 36. And then they sold it, I think it was in 42, about the year I was born, to the Rada family, who had it for a number of years. And Kathy Rada, who's a neighbor of mine now, grew up in the house.
Wow.
And then it became the Pollock House, who was a prominent physician here on the island.
Mm-hmm.
And then about, I guess it's been 5-6 years ago, it came in the market again, and I wanted to get my cousins and I to go buy it.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody thought, what a dumb idea. They're right. It needed a lot of work, but it's a great-looking place. You could drive by it. When you're right at the Orchard House, there's the house to your right. It's yellow with dark brown beams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and,
yeah. I'm on the Burton Loop. Yeah, I know that one.
Oh, you're on the Burton Loop. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm at 9223 Harbor Drive. I shouldn't say that on the radio.
Cool.
Yeah. Here's my address. Come on by.
Now our hardcore fans are going to come to your house. So good luck with that.
Anyway, that's sort of my legacy around here. I loved living here. When I turned 14, I engaged in a little bit of what's it called?
Shenanigans?
Nepotism. I got my uncle to hire me to work in the greenhouses. So he engaged in child labor violations, and I engaged in nepotism. And for every summer from then until I was 19, I worked in the greenhouses, go to work early in the morning before the sun was up sometimes, and quit at 3 o'clock, take my earnings, put it into gas money because I had a boat.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I did.
I worked in the- And I understand you and Keith have a similar alumna situation. You went to the same college.
Yeah. Hi, Aggie.
UC Davis, yeah?
Yep.
Yeah?
I didn't go to school there. I worked there.
You worked there.
For a quarter of a century.
A quarter of a century?
I worked as an independent contractor for a long time, on and off, for the federal government, for state governments, foundations, et cetera. And then I thought to myself, I need a retirement plan. So I was living in Sacramento, and I thought, who's got the biggest computer system in Northern California? UC Davis. So that's where I went and got a job as an analyst doing research, which is kind of my fondness, if you will. And so I stayed there for 25 years, met my wife there, Karen. And we both retired. I really retired in 2000, and then I flunked retirement 5 times.
You flunked retirement?
Yeah, I'm an underachiever. So I went back to work at UC Davis School of Medicine for another 3 years. It was a lot of fun, dumpster diving. and so that's what I spent my time doing. My mom went to UC Davis back in the 60s.
Was there a big exodus of, you know, it's definitely a thing right now when kids tend to leave the island. So your mom left the island, right?
She didn't leave the island. She left the Pacific Northwest to go to UCLA. And she was the oldest of 4 girls. And the reason that they had a house in Seattle and a house on Vashon was that my grandfather owned a logging company in Aberdeen, and he didn't think 4 girls should grow up with a bunch of lumberjacks.
Yeah.
I think that was kind of wise of him. So every year when we would traipse north, we would take 5 days to go from Bakersfield or LA to Vashon.
Mm.
And we would wander all over the place. One time we actually backtracked something like 75 miles because she discovered something that she wanted to do that was off our track.
That's awesome. So she was kind of an adventurer.
And the three of us kids would wander with her.
That's great.
But yeah, UC Davis. What's your connection to Davis?
I was an undergrad there from 53 to 58.
Wow. Cool.
Yeah, graduated and went right into the Army, as we all did in those days. Went into something.
Yeah.
And so it was great because the enrollment was about 2,000.
Yep.
And North and South Hall were all active. I mean, it was the good old days. I was in Hughes Hall, and then the Theta Xi fraternity. I great experience.
Yeah, no, the campus is really cool. I liked it a lot because even though it had an image as an ag campus, it has a really strong engineering program.
Yes.
It had, as a matter of fact, the ag school, the College of Ag is the smallest of the three colleges on campus. I went to work there because it had a great big huge Burroughs mainframe. And then 2 years after I got there, they gave me my own supercomputer.
What? Speaking of operating large things, Bill, what did you end up doing for your career?
Well, I flew big airplanes. I was a pilot for TWA
for
30 years. I learned to fly in the Army, and that translated into a great job in the mid-60s.
It's kind of like a big supercomputer.
You have a baseball cap that says TWA in the cap.
Yes, I do.
I saw you day before yesterday in that.
I wear it a lot.
You do. I've seen you in it.
That's such a Vachon thing.
Little did I know that I'm going to be sitting across from you.
So he caught your eye.
This is why you can't do bad things on the island.
No, people will definitely know.
Never say anything bad about anybody.
Yeah, people will definitely know.
At least don't wear a recognizable hat.
Right. Don't be too recognizable. So, Bill, you were a commercial pilot for TWA for 30 years.
Yeah.
Right. So you both have these really steep careers. What did you like about flying? What attracted you to flying?
Oh, I think it was just the hands-on, just the feel of flying. It was great.
I can empathize. I wanted to learn to fly, but I have positional vertigo. So that's a bad combination.
That would be difficult. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bill, what was it like? I've always wondered this about commercial pilots and flying those big planes. What was it like the first time you're actually landing a plane with a full crew and a full flight? Like, you've done it in a simulator, I'm assuming, and you've done it with someone else a couple times, I'm hoping. But what's that like to bring that giant beast down? And that, I just always wondered what that's like from your perspective.
Well, I wouldn't separate the landing from the takeoff or the in-flight.
They're both equally as important.
You know, we're sitting up there at the nose of this thing. We're the first to get to where we're going, and we just want to make it as safe as possible. It was never a concern. The thing that is kind of interesting and kind of frightening is that I'm sure I've been out of it for almost 30 years now. I retired in 95, so, but I'm sure it's the same way. All their training is done in the simulator.
Mm-hmm.
You're not actually flying the airplane until you have passengers on board.
Wow.
Oh, interesting.
But you have a pilot with you for a number of hours, but that took place toward the end of my career, that when I checked out in the 727, it was all in the simulator, and then you go online. And you're, you know, first time you've flown that airplane.
Wow.
You know, in actuality. Whereas in the early days, you flew the airplane in training, but it was very expensive. And then every now and then they'd lose an airplane, and that wasn't cool either.
Do you remember what your pilot spiel was when you'd get on the intercom and talk to the passengers?
One thing I never wanted to say was sit back and relax, which you hear a lot.
Yeah.
That's true.
I didn't want to remind people that they should sit back and relax. Of course, you can't sit back at all now or relax in
their place.
True.
So what would you say if you were on your flight right now? What would you say?
Just the facts, ma'am.
Say?
You know, we're going from A to B. And
do you say who you are? Do you say your name?
I don't believe so, no.
Did you say this is your captain speaking?
Yeah.
I want you to say it. That's so great.
Come on, Bill. Now, would you use a ranch metaphor in any of your speaking over the intercom system?
I try to keep it as simple as possible.
You know, I appreciate that when I'm on a flight. You know, if the pilot gets on and starts making jokes and stuff, I'm like, one job. And it's not making jokes.
Leave that up to the flight attendants who have a spiel of their own, you know, to... Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, when did you start flying?
Well, that was interesting. I was in the Army. I went through ROTC at Davis, and I knew I was going in at that period of time in something. So I went to ROTC and went into the Army and went to Fort Knox and trained as an armor officer. second lieutenant, and I was assigned to Fort Lewis, right down the road here.
Nice.
And I spent there, during that year, I was a platoon leader and an infantry brigade and armor recon platoon leader. And I got a ride in an L-19, which is a Cessna observation plane, army plane. And I said, holy mackerel. This is kind of like my Austin Healey. I think I'd like this. So I applied to flight school and got in and went to Texas and went through flight training and stayed on in the Army Aviation School in Alabama as an instructor. And I stayed in the Army for a little over 4 years between Fort Rucker, Alabama, and Fort Riley, Kansas. Got married, got out, and went to work for Wells Fargo Bank for a couple of years. But I was flying in the National Guard. And in the mid-60s, the airlines were hiring. So I said,
I'm not much
of a banker. Take me, I'm yours.
Get me out of this bank.
That's great.
So, yeah, the rest is that 30-year history. It was great. And I was very lucky because I was hired as a co-pilot during the time when transport airplanes had flight engineers. It was always a three-man cockpit. And the entry-level job was as a flight engineer. But they alternated flight engineers and co-pilots during that period of time that I was hired. So I was hired as a Lockheed Constellation co-pilot, which was huge.
Yeah.
Big four propellers, which I'd been flying
three
single engine
stabilizers
tail draggers
in the back.
Yeah.
It's no Spruce Goose, but.
And so I flew the Lockheed Constellation and then the Convair 880 jet. And the 707, 727, 747 over the 30 years and went all over the world. And
yeah. And I know it's interesting. I've met your wife, Sally, and she was just as into airplanes when you met her.
Yeah.
She had a passion for airplanes.
Yeah. She was in San Diego and was not far from, or went out to North Island Air Station, I guess, and watched the jets. And there were always pilots around and just a little socializing with some aviators, I suppose. And
yeah.
And so when we got together, she built a little airplane in her kindergarten class. It kind of was a little tail dragger, and that was pretty cool.
Okay, let's talk about hobbies, interests. So what are you guys up to? Like as of now, what are you up to? I know it's COVID.
I guess, let's see, what are my hobbies? I hike. I read, I write, I build boats. I mostly mess about in boats.
Oh, yeah, that's a good
I
one.
I play around with photography. I'm on the one of the two volunteers that runs the Senior Center's photography club every Wednesday, 10 to 11:30.
That's happening during COVID?
Right now by Zoom.
Yep. Yeah, yep. Great, great.
And so that's kind of my ritual is I get up in the morning, do my breakfast, and go out and try and get at least 4 miles in, either indoors on my peculiar little exercise device or out on the Doctrine Forest, because I live a quarter of a mile away from the Doctrine Forest, and it's my favorite hunting grounds for looking for things to take pictures of, actually. So those are the kinds of things that I do. I love to read. I do a lot of reading. And I guess that's about it. I just kind of, I'm a dilettante, which is, in English, it sort of has a loaded meaning.
Mm-hmm.
But in French, it means somebody who discovers.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of me, my habit. I try and find out things to
curiosity.
Look at.
Curiosity.
What do you like to do? What even you and Sally, what do you guys like to do when you're here?
Well, I like music. I'm involved online with a ukulele lady in Nashville, and I'm taking banjo lessons from a guy in St. Louis. Very elaborate online presence, and it's patting your head and rubbing your tummy to make your right hand work on that banjo. But I'm looking at it.
So. Well, I've seen you play. You've got some chops. I've seen you play.
That's cool. That's really neat.
So it's fun, and then I'm a car guy. And I take from my dad, he was very mechanically and hands-on guy. When we moved to Cupertino, there was a lot of rehabbing to do with the old family farm, ranch house and barns and all, and he did all that. He could do all that. Although he commuted to San Francisco every day, he worked at Crocker Bank. The weekends and nights were, let's go to the workshop and do stuff. So I picked that up from him, and I have a pretty, brought my as much shop as I could with me here. So I'm hoping, I'm getting Cooper, my grandson, involved in, every time I have a task, I said, come on, Cooper. You know, this is how you do it.
Your grandson's name is Cooper?
Cooper, yeah.
Cooper.
Yeah.
That was my border collie's name.
Well, so, it's a line of hockey gear in his day.
Yes, I know.
Yeah, he's named after a line of hockey
and
gear.
It's a line of tires, and it's a line of racing cars.
Cars, yeah.
So, Bill, tell us what's in your garage right now. What's the project
you've
got
going?
I have
an old MG and a restored pickup truck that my dad bought new. It's a 60 Chevy pickup, half-ton pickup, and it got crushed by a tree at the Gray Eagle Ranch. But I have a godson who's a motorhead, and he took it on and restored it from absolutely nothing, and that's in the garage.
It's absolutely
which MG
beautiful.
Is it?
TC.
Oh, boy. Nice.
I've had it for 50 years, so it's,
wow.
It's part of the
I
family.
Love old pickups. There's some great old pickups on the island.
You got to come see his. It's. I walked into the garage, and I'm a truck person. I have a big truck. I love trucks. I love old trucks. Wow, it took my breath away. It was just...
If only you listeners could see Tara right now.
Yeah, right now my favorite island truck is that Diamond T, the green one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Always look on the lookout for a good old truck. I had a two-tone Ford F-150 from 70s version, green and white. His name was Emmett. It was a beautiful truck. It was great. Yeah. So you and Sally also like to walk, so you do the loop.
Yeah,
and
we do the loop or walk down to Paradise Cove and back. We live right at the top of the hill there. Now that's a good workout.
Yeah. Yeah, there's lots to do, especially if you love to hike.
Yeah.
In the summer of 59 and the summer of 60, a best friend of mine and I walked all the way around Vashon Island on a bet, kind of on a bet to ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
George McCormick did it in the late 30s on a bet that he could do it in under 24 hours. And we beat his time the first time by almost an hour. The second time, we almost screwed up and we came in at the same time George McCormick did because we didn't plan for the tides in Quartermaster Harbor.
Yeah.
Dumb idea. You want to go through Quartermaster Harbor, rule of thumb for anybody who wants to hike the island. You got to get Quartermaster Harbor from Docton all the way to Jensen's Point. You want to do it at high tide. The reason is the silt.
Mm.
The silt all the way from, actually north of Docton near Rab's Lagoon, all the way around the inner harbor is such that you will lose a shoe, period. You just, you cannot avoid it if you do it at low tide or even at a moderate tide.
Yeah.
Jensen's Point's good and dry, but Judd Creek.
Oh, I live in Burton, so I drive by that Judd Creek. That's a swamp.
Yes.
Down in there. Yeah.
It's really neat to go gunkholing in with a canoe or a kayak at high tide, but.
So your route around the island, is that at the water line? No roads?
Yeah, not on the roads, just in on the beach.
Okay.
And we did it stupidly. A smart person would go counterclockwise around Vashon and clockwise around Maury Island so that your legs at the end of the trip end up being the same length.
That's very smart. Okay.
Didn't do it, though. Didn't do it smart way, though. Not. Tommy and I had a great time, though. We ended up doing a couple things that I would do differently if I could do it now, is up toward the north end from Sylvan Beach to the ferry dock. There were a whole bunch of trees that were leaning out into the water and we had to swim around them.
Hmm.
And it was cold.
Ooh. Yeah, I bet. Yeah.
And that's the worst current to be swimming in because that's where Colvos meets the current running around. It was a little tricky.
Yeah, mostly houses there now, so I imagine there's not a lot of trees and debris
from,
and stuff.
From Biloxi North, it's a little dicey there still.
Yeah.
And, I know, Bill, you and Sally like to do a lot of walking.
Yeah, we like the loop. I don't like to go off road with my eyesight, but so I kind of stay away from the woods, if you will.
Yeah,
but we love the loop. That's perfect for us.
Well, I think that's probably where I saw you the other day.
I'm sure, yeah.
Probably right there in the Burt coffee stand.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is where we met.
How would you say the island has, the island has changed in just in the last 10 years, but how would you say, you know, what's the biggest thing you notice different from the change on the island?
Actually, the population explosion is not that visible.
Yeah.
Which is kind of weird to me because when I was here in the summers, the year-round population is around 4,000.
Yeah.
And it would almost double in the summers. Now, you got to remember, historically, Vashon was first, besides the indigenous people, was first basically a summer place for people. They had all these little settlements all the way around Liza Beulah, Sylvan Beach, there were just people living on the beaches, had basically tent frames almost. And then people started figuring out, oh, there's farmland up there, you know. And
a lot of Japanese farmers came.
Yeah. So that changed it a lot. But, and it was always kind of amusing to me that there's a stereotype, if you will, of Californians, because we would flee the heat of California to come to north to Vashon. And we were not alone. I mean, where we stayed in Burton from 52 to 63 was property owned by Booth Gardner's father, Brick Gardner. Now Booth Gardner was, of course, the
former governor, yes.
So I sort of grew up with this older person that hung around as Booth Gardner. Well, when we quit, my mom bought a house just up from 299th Southwest, and we quit renting the place from Brick Gardner. Booth scraped the house off and built a summer home there. So that's how it's called Governor's Lane now. There were two governors who have lived and still have properties there.
Hmm.
And so it's one of those things where it was kind of it's like it's in my blood now. And so when I have my preferences about where to go hiking, I go to Burton. I walk the Burton Loop at least once a week.
Yeah.
And I've turned it into something that my dog likes to do. When the tide's out far enough, I take her out to the public part of the beach and let her run and romp. And but
getting acquainted is a little bit difficult during these times we're in because we're pretty much stay-at-homes. I did join the chorale when we first got here and sang one season with them. And then that all came to a halt, and I met a couple of guys, and so it's just so we're just sequestered and waiting for something to happen.
So, Bill, you mentioned that it's a little difficult to meet new people on the island right now. Keith, do you have any advice for someone, you know, generally and also maybe during COVID, for how to meet and integrate yourself into the island communities?
Well, here I sort of stick on my community organizer hat. I would hang out at places where people hang out, like the Burton Coffee Stand, like downtown here, like during the weekdays, just anywhere downtown. You just bump into people. I keep bumping into people from Davis.
Do you?
Yes. Casey, who does dog training, lives in Burton.
She has a triple Oatly latte twice a day. One calf, one decaf.
Now Tara is sharing your latte secrets.
Well, her husband, anyway, yeah, she's an amazing dog trainer. I've seen the work she's done. So great.
Well, we bumped into her at Jensen's Point about a year ago. And we were chatting away. And she said, "Where are you from?" And we said, "Davis." And she said, "Oh, I'm from Davis too." And she said, "What part of Davis?" And I said, "Well, we lived at 4th and J." And she says, "Oh, I know your house. As a matter of fact, I used to give treats to your dog."
What?
And she lived a block and a half away from us, and would walk. We lived right almost downtown. We had a 1912 bungalow that was built by one of the first city council members, And so we were right in this corner where anybody walking downtown to get a coffee or whatever, you know, they would walk right past our house and she would feed, Casey would feed our dog treats, which is weird. So we had just gotten a new dog, a miniature American Shepherd. Looks like an Aussie, about 30 pounds. Yeah. She's a little chunky. But we ran into Casey. My optometrist at Island Eye Care graduated Davis. Over off of Beale Road, there's a guy who went to law school at UC Davis.
Wow.
And there's a woman who lives in town, and she drives a pale blue Prius. She's from Davis as well.
Good luck finding an owner of a pale blue Prius on Vashon Island. I think there's a couple.
Calling all UC Davis grads.
Yeah. It's like Honda Elements. They're kind of like a disease.
Well,
I couldn't agree with you more about the Burton Coffee Stand. I'm a sub. I substitute as a barista there, and this is a new development. But I've always known that is a staple. The people who go there every morning, the regulars that go there every morning, hell or high water, they are there. Hail, rain, snow. Yep. And then what happens is there's always lively conversation. Everyone's always engaged. And it's just this constant flux and flow. And I remember the person that I rent from, Susie Fitzhugh, she's a photographer also. She told me when I first moved here that was her social club, and the price of admission was her, you know, $3 Americano that she paid every day. And it's one of those traditions, you know. Yeah. It's like running into people in the bulk food aisle, you know, at Thriftway. It's you see the same people, and now we have to recognize people over the masks, which I've been confused for people I'm not, and I've also confused people for people they're not, but getting used to all of that. Those are great suggestions.
Yeah, food and drink tend to be, you know, maybe it's a everywhere thing, but they seem to be a connector of people.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, the Burton Coffee Stand is definitely a plus. And what I've tried to do, although it's kind of difficult, my preference is to go for my hike, get a coffee, sit in the corner, talk to people.
Yeah,
I met a couple of the members of the band Saint Ophelia there.
Oh, Joe Benzetta, I love Saint Ophelia. Yeah. Rebecca Kuzma, that band is amazing.
And every once in a while, Michael Whitmore shows up. Since you're a musician, like stringed instruments, you should check out Sumtet whenever they've got something going on.
And Michael's a Morning Scramble host as well here at the radio station.
Yeah, and my musical taste runs toward jazz and folk music and stuff like that. I don't like big band jazz. I like little combo jazz. But as a matter of fact, I tried banjo. I haven't got the dexterity for it in the left hand.
You know the problem.
I know the problem. Well, and I had started with guitar. Uh-huh. And so I admire somebody who plays banjo because I had a hard time building up calluses on my left fingers. Mm-hmm. And I would, when I picked up banjo and I would play it, I would cut myself.
Oh.
And then, of course, I couldn't play the guitar because I'm wearing a bandit, which sort of ruins your musicality, if you will. So I had, you know, I think I should have stayed with something like a ukulele.
Yeah, with the gut strings.
Well, yep. I was talking to Megan Hastings from Snapdragon about all of the instruments and hobbies people have picked up during COVID that people have learned new instruments. And I thought, well, we need to have a show. Like we need to do a show. And the one song that everybody's been learning to play really, really well, like we'll have you go to Snapdragon. And
we all know it's Pachelbel's Canon. Yeah, come on.
Or it's like, the Somewhere Over the Rainbow, you know, the ukulele. Like everybody learns the same
Mary
songs.
Mary Had a Little Lamb.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Twinkle, twinkle.
I was like, you know, it's like, that's what I want about the whole like recital.
I don't know if I'm available that day. Whatever day you have that planned.
I'll take the slide whistle myself.
Well, Bill, I mean, I know being a newbie is always, you know, it's challenging no matter where you are in your life. And is there anything any way that you would like to connect with people or ways or hobbies or conversations you'd like to have? Or
I enjoyed the chorale. I missed that. Of course, now with my eyesight, I have trouble reading music. So, it's a new phase of my life. I've got macular degeneration. I mean, I see all what's going on. I see you, and my right eye is better than my left, but the print in a book and my computer screen's fine. I can blow it up, you know. And so I'm big on audiobooks. I have Audible and Chirp strings of books, and I really enjoy that.
Then I have a recommendation for you. Helen Zaltzman has a podcast called The Allusionist, Allusion, and she talks about language, and she's a Brit, and she's really entertaining, really, really good.
Allusionist, okay.
Write that down. Yeah, I appreciate that.
Good. Yeah, no, there are not a lot of podcasts I listen to, and I haven't quite gotten the hang of books on tape or anything like that. I love the smell of ink and paper and binding. So when I read, I basically am curled up with a book. I don't even like electronic books. I've only read one because it wasn't available in print. I should share with you my phone number and stuff so that we can get together and go for hikes together.
I'd love to be more acquainted with your haunt out yonder.
Yep. Yeah.
On the other side of the island.
Yes, but you probably haven't spent a lot of time on Docton.
Well, we've roamed around out there.
Sure. Yeah.
Quite a bit. Just by car.
Yeah. Yeah. It's beautiful.
Well, I'm just about a mile and a quarter up the hill from Docton. Mm-hmm. And matter of fact, that's where I launched the boat that I built last year. Mm-hmm. And I'm building another boat now, which, as I said, my fondness is not necessarily for messing around in boats, it's messing around with boats.
Mm-hmm. Right.
What are you building?
I'm building a skin-on-frame rowing shell. It's going to be 18 feet long, which is about the same length as I built a dory, a Downeaster dory, last winter. And I've actually only taken it out 3 times, much to my wife's chagrin. And so this one is going to be a lightweight rowing shell with outrigger arms. But the trick about this one is I've sort of re-engineered the design of it so that if I'm sitting in one direction, it's a rowing shell. If I turn around, I've got a kayak.
Brilliant. Oh, well, you know, Adam and I are both rowers.
Yeah, we're both rowers.
Well, yeah. Which one, Burton Beach or Jensen?
Vashon. Jensen. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a passion.
Yeah, I occasionally will launch at Docton and row around to Jensen's Point. I really want to do it at a really high tide and go all the way up Judd Creek as far as I can go.
Yes. I've actually rode a rowing shell as far up as I could go in there. Yeah, single.
Yeah.
And Bill, you like sailing. We didn't talk about that, but you did a special sailing trip here on the island, didn't you? It was for your birthday or Father's Day or...
Well, let me tell you about my special sailing trip. You got time?
Yes, we have time.
I mean, this is pretty amazing. One of my classmates at TWA retired early, and he had built, or his brother was building him a boat, a 41-foot steel hull sloop. And his brother lived up in Nanaimo.
Uh-huh.
I guess it's
I know where that
right
is.
Over here someplace. Mm-hmm.
They got great bars there.
not drinking bars, but food bars.
So
yep.
taken the boat, brought it down to San Francisco Bay and did some outfitting and then sailed it on down through the canal and spent, 5 or 6 years in the Caribbean. And he had been back and forth. He had been to Tahiti and Hawaii and up and down in that part of the Pacific. And,
that's adventurous for a 40-footer.
Yeah, and and he said, you know, this is your last chance. I'm going to sell the boat. I'm reached the end, and I had retired by then. So he said, you join me and you get to Tahiti and we'll sail to Honolulu. So the two of us did that. We spent 2 months on the boat.
Very nice.
And we spent quite a bit of time in the Line Islands, just north of the equator, being the only gringos in sight for weeks and weeks. And it was a great, great experience.
Yeah.
My one shot.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's do a little rapid fire. So, Adam, you just want to alternate?
Sure.
Okay, so we'll just ask you real quick, and you can just answer as much as or as little as you want. So, first one.
What's your favorite restaurant on the island? This can be like pre-COVID, post-COVID kind of dual situation, because I know some restaurants that are amazing, you know, haven't been able to maintain.
The one on the corner.
A hardware store?
Yeah.
Yep.
Hardware store.
Zamorana. Fish tacos are to die for.
Oh,
It used to be between Zamorana and the Red Bicycle, but of course the Red Bicycle went bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yes.
Because I like sushi.
Oh, I miss the sushi on the island so much.
That was such a Vashon thing. That was a real sushi chef.
That was a real...
The pool hall/sushi restaurant.
Yeah, but that closed during COVID or before COVID? I think it was before.
It was right before.
Favorite, so you're a hardware store and you're a Zamorana's fish tacos. Perfect. What's your favorite road on the island? Either whether if it's scenic or just your favorite way to drive.
And I'm terrible
with the west side from where we live, right on up the west side as far as you can go.
Yeah, west side highway is.
Good question. I think I would probably have to say 75th Southwest as it drops down from Upper Gold Beach to Lower Gold Beach. My wife loves to hike it. I sort of like to hike it. It's steep.
Yeah.
If you just walk from our house down to the bottom and back up, you've done 1 mile and you climb 250 feet.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Perfect. All right. The Drift Day.
What? Yeah. So most people on the island, I would say, shop at Thriftway and or IGA. What's your favorite aisle at Thriftway?
Probably back around the seafood area.
Okay. The meats area.
I buy a lot of their lox that they carve up.
Yum.
I eat and much to my wife's chagrin, I also feed some of it to my dog. Little deer.
Do you have a favorite aisle?
Produce.
You like the produce?
The veggies and fruit.
Yeah, it's
always looking.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, this will be easy for both of you guys because you do a lot of this. Favorite, you can say your favorite beach, your favorite hike, your favorite trail.
Let's see, beach, Burton Beach from basically the old post office, which is not owned by the Olsons, down to the 99th, which is where Governor's Rose meets 99th. Trail, all of the Dockton Forest. I just wander that place a lot.
Yeah.
And what was the third one?
Beach, hike, trail. So I think you covered it.
Yep.
Yep. What about you?
I don't have a trail. Just the Burton Loop is a great walk for us. We'd love to go from our place up to the airport and then down that hill and then back around. I don't even know the name of the streets.
Yeah.
And then back up to us.
Do you walk down Old Mill Road off of that 220th past the airport, that real narrow road that's really woodsy and beautiful? Yeah, that's one of my favorite. Okay, so we always read this quote from Betty McDonald's Onions in the Stew. Are you familiar with this book? Yes, she wrote it about her moving to Vashon here in the 40s. She says, "I cannot say that everyone should live as we do, but you might be happy on an island if you can face up to any of the following." We love number 7. Anyone contemplating island dwelling must be physically strong, and it's an added advantage if you aren't too bright. Well, thank you guys so much for coming.
Thank you. This has been a treat.
Good. Well,
nice to meet you, Keith.
Well, I hope to see you again out on the Burton Loop and elsewhere.
Right.